You're back with Annie on 3CR Breakfast, and that was a lovely piece of music, I'll have to say. It was called Touch, and it was sung by Melanie Horsnell. And we're moving on with Acts of Cruelty, which seems like a pretty hard way to go after a lovely song like that. But we've got Sister Aileen Crow on the line. G'day, Sister. How are you?
Hi, Annie. I'm fine.
Yeah, and we're talking about your book, Acts of Cruelty. And it's interesting because you're focusing on the experiences of people seeking protection after arriving by plane. I mean, we're all aware that The politicians stood on the shore and said, nobody who arrives here on boats will ever be able to settle here. But what's the experience of people who arrive by plane?
It's quite different in the sense that they're not locked up to start with. They're not put in detention as soon as they arrive. So they're left to their own resources and they don't know anybody here. Some of them, actually, one family spent the first few nights in Redfern Park Sydney here, where the Aborigines actually brought them food and took care of them. So, I mean, and they had three little children. One was a six-month-old baby. So they really have. It depends on how much money they have when they arrive, just how they begin their life journey here.
So you've done a lot of advocacy, haven't you?
Yes, I began I was working in the Catholic Social Justice Office in Sydney when a community worker rang me and asked if I could help one family. This was the family that had been in Redfern Park. And from there, word just spread, and I just found myself getting more and more involved in helping them. By the time they came to me, though, their system, all the systems had failed them. They failed the initial assessment. They failed the review in the tribunal and the court. And they were supposed to pack up and go home. But when I listened to their stories, I thought it would be very dangerous for them to go home. So I then asked for all their papers and I went through and examined the decision. And I was horrified. I was horrified at the way decisions were made and how they were negatively geared to fail them.
To send people back to danger.
Yeah, to send them back. I discovered that, you know, refugee law, international refugee law was being ignored and the decisions were quite deceitful in the sense that they weren't accepting what the people were presenting. Like, for example, one case was a poor girl who, you know, she was just 20, 21 or something, and she'd been abducted and tortured and fled the country and came to Australia. Now, when you put in an application, you try and get information from human rights places or news items which indicate that this type of thing was happening to other people in the country. So it wasn't just her, but it was more something that was happening.
A pattern of behaviour.
Yeah. And then so she put it in and the assessor just said that her written testimony was a mere assertion and it wasn't based on true incident. And then she had the tick to say that it was composed using ideas and terminology she found in the fairly random assortment of articles downloaded from the internet prior to writing her protection application. So she turned the supporting evidence against her and said, you know, she made it all up based on what she read, which was appalling.
Actually, that's very interesting because I just recently was watching something that where a person who had been traumatized by sexual abuse as a child at a school went to court in his 40s, and there were other people who also went to court at the same time. But because of his drug abuse and alcohol abuse, his evidence wasn't taken into account because he was considered to be unstable. The problem is that he was self-medicating because of those incidents.
Exactly.
How bizarre, isn't it?
That's the evidence right in front of them.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking too. That's so weird.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So obviously there's real problems within the actual establishment's understanding of our Australia's commitment to human rights.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without the human rights legislation, it's really, really difficult because the Parliament just ignores it. You know, and when they make their laws, they say that they pass them through a parliamentary committee, human rights committee. But it has no teeth. It just doesn't answer the problem. We need human rights legislation.
It's interesting because harsh legal procedures and historically racist and toxic immigration culture. They are very direct accusations.
They are, and it's true. I mean, well, it's my experience, should I say. It is my experience.
Well, how did you go about writing Acts of Cruelty? Because this is a book, and so and you're doing a launch at the NIBS, New International Bookshop, on the 21st, and in Sydney, and it's got a lot of support from human rights lawyers as well as people who are refugee advocates. How did you actually go about writing this book?
Well, I decided to write the book because there's very little written on people who arrive by plane to begin with. But then when I started to scrutinise the decisions that were made, I thought this is really something that's much deeper. And it then sort of led me to try and understand what was wrong with the system. What was annoying me a lot was the fact that the Minister for Immigration and the Prime Minister were constantly saying that these people had their claims assessed and are found not to be needing Australia's protection. And I thought the assessment was so poor and they were so lacking in fairness that I had to write the book about. Then I wrote the book about how assessments were made.
So did you actually use cases, particular cases?
Absolutely, yep. I used about eight particular cases, longer examples, and about another 12 examples that go through the years because it's a 20-year thing. I started this back in early 2020. And I did a PhD researching the decisions, and that was completed in 2014 or 15. And I still didn't get around to writing the book because I was still helping people with their cases. So it was only when the lockdown occurred that I had time to write. So So that's when I started to write it. But when I then looked at all the decisions, I looked at then how they could be within the law. And that made me think about the way decisions are made in the parliament. And then I looked at the tension between the parliament and the courts, because the parliament were making decisions that really were putting judges in an unenviable position, because they have to care for the whole of the population of Australia, not just citizens. And so when you look at that, you think, well, who are not citizens? And up until our history shows that the Indigenous people were not citizens for how many years, right up until they were just recognised in 65 as people. But they still have a long way to go in being not being discriminated against.
So what are you saying that the legislation is contrary to the spirit of human rights that Australia has actually signed up to in relation to the UN, and then that the judges in the courts are put in this position where they can't... the dissonance is very great, and the people are the ones that are actually bearing the brunt of this cruelty.
Exactly. And the thing is, there's a real danger of the courts losing their power, being their power being usurped by the parliament. And that goes against all international law, because, you know, the courts have to be an independent body.
So the government was, the previous government, it was quite clear, was hiding behind this false illusion that some orderly process was in was going on, and these people had put their names forward, and then they were looked at and they were found to be wanting. But in actual fact, they were stacking the books, really. You want to go and see, go to NIBS on the 21st of June, Acts of Cruelty book launch, 6 to 8 p.m.